All right, law students, get ready for a deep dive into a case that really throws a curveball into criminal law.
Yeah.
We're talking about State v. Fields, a case that went all the way to the North Carolina Supreme Court. And get this, it's all about whether someone can commit a crime without even knowing they're doing it.
Ah, that's the core issue.
Sounds impossible, right?
It really does challenge our basic assumptions about how criminal law works.
That's what State v. Fields asks us to consider. Can someone be guilty if they weren't even conscious of their actions?
Exactly. Fields hinges on this concept of automatism, this idea that someone might act without any conscious control, almost like they're on autopilot.
Okay, so let's unpack this automatism thing. We've got court documents, legal analyses, even some hypothetical scenarios to help us wrap our heads around what happened in State v. Fields. But before we get into all the legal nitty-gritty, let's talk about the people involved. This isn't just some abstract legal puzzle. It's a story about real lives, and a pretty tragic one at that.
Absolutely. The facts of the case are really key to understanding why the legal arguments are so groundbreaking.
So true.
The story centers around Wayne Fields, a man who experienced a deeply traumatic event early in life. At 14 years old, he had to shoot his abusive stepfather in self-defense.
Just imagine the psychological impact of something like that. And years later, this trauma resurfaces in a really shocking way. Fields is accused of shooting Isaiah Barnes not once, but twice, with multiple eyewitnesses to the event.
Right, and this is where things start to get really interesting from a legal perspective. Fields' defense team doesn't deny that he pulled the trigger.
Okay, so they're not disputing the basic facts of the case.
Right, and they don't claim he's insane either. Instead, they argue that he was in a dissociative state brought on by his PTSD during the shootings, like a psychological blackout. They're saying he was essentially an automaton acting without any conscious control.
So enter Dr. Evans Harrell, the expert witness who diagnosed Fields with PTSD. He testifies that in his professional opinion, Fields was indeed dissociated during the shooting.
Dr. Harrell's testimony is really pivotal here.
Absolutely. Wow. This testimony becomes crucial for the defense, who are trying to prove that Fields, while he might have been responsible for the act, wasn't in control of his own mind at the time.
Dr. Harrell's testimony zeroes in on this really fundamental element of criminal law, the idea of actus reus, which is Latin for guilty act.
Ah, yes, actus reus, one of the cornerstones of criminal liability.
To be convicted of a crime, you have to have committed a voluntary act. But what happens when someone acts involuntarily, like during a seizure, or as the defense argues, in this case, a dissociative episode?
So the big question becomes, if someone is in a dissociative state, can we really say they're acting voluntarily? Are their actions truly their own? If it's like Dr. Harrell suggests, and they're essentially on autopilot, can they really be held criminally responsible?
That's the crux of the issue. And the North Carolina Supreme Court really had to wrestle with these questions. Their decision had major ripple effects throughout the legal system. To guide future cases, they created a four-part test to determine when juries must be told about automatism as a possible defense.
So this four-part test, it sounds like something every law student should have on their radar, maybe even on a flashcard somewhere. Break it down for us. What are the four elements?
You're absolutely right. This is crucial stuff for anyone hoping to pass the bar. So first, there has to be evidence that the action was involuntary. This isn't just saying, I didn't mean to do it. There needs to be something suggesting a genuine lack of control over one's actions, like a reflex or a seizure.
Makes sense. But how do you actually prove something like that in court?
That's where the second element comes in. The court in Fields said you need expert testimony to back up any claims of automatism. That's where figures like Dr. Harrell become so essential. Their expertise can link the defendant's actions to a recognized medical or psychological condition.
So it's not enough to simply say, I blacked out, I don't remember.
Right.
You need a qualified expert to connect the dots and provide some evidence-based analysis.
Exactly. Now here's where things get even more nuanced. The third element states that voluntary intoxication can't be involved. So if the defendant was under the influence of drugs or alcohol they chose to consume, automatism goes out the window.
So if Fields had been drinking heavily before the shooting, claiming a PTSD-triggered episode might not have flown in court.
It would have been a much, much tougher argument to make. The court really wanted to create a clear distinction. Automatism is for cases where someone truly loses control due to forces outside their conscious choice, not for situations where their actions are linked to voluntary intoxication.
Okay, I'm following you. Now, what's that fourth and final element of the test?
The fourth element focuses on whether there's even enough evidence to warrant instructing the jury about automatism. The judge acts as a gatekeeper, ensuring that the defense's argument isn't flimsy, and that there's sufficient evidence for a reasonable jury to potentially consider automatism as a reason to acquit the defendant.
So the judge is making sure that the defense's case isn't just a long shot, that it has a real chance of persuading the jury.
Precisely. And to grasp the core principle at play here, let's look at what the court itself said. In their opinion, they stated, absence of consciousness excludes the possibility of a voluntary act without which there can be no criminal liability.
Whoa, that's a powerful statement. It really highlights that for someone to be held criminally responsible, they need to have acted consciously. If that element's missing, the whole foundation of criminal liability starts to crumble.
Exactly. And the court went on to differentiate State v. Fields from another important precedent, State v. Jarrett. In Jarrett, the court had ruled that voluntary intoxication negated the possibility of an automatism defense.
So the court is building on existing case law while also refining the boundaries of this defense, making it clear when it applies and when it doesn't.
Precisely. Fields highlights that really nuanced relationship between intoxication and automatism. It's not a blanket defense for any altered mental state. It hinges on the absence of conscious control due to factors that are not the result of the defendant's voluntary actions.
All right, so we've got this four-part test. We've got some key precedents shaping the legal landscape. But what does all of this mean for Wayne Fields? Did the court ultimately side with his defense?
That's a great question, and one we'll dive into in the next part of our deep dive. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to our deep dive into State v. Fields. Last time we left off with a big question. Did the court accept Fields' claim of automatism, or was he still going to be held responsible for the shooting?
Well, the North Carolina Supreme Court made a pretty bold move. They actually overturned Fields' conviction and sent the case back for a whole new trial.
So they really did rule in favor of the defense? That's a huge win for anyone trying to use automatism as a defense in court.
It was a landmark decision for sure. The court decided that the original trial judge had made a mistake, a big one, by not letting the jury even hear about automatism as a possible defense. Remember that four-part test we talked about? Well, the Supreme Court said Fields met all the criteria, meaning he had the right for the jury to weigh in on whether his actions were truly automatic.
Hold on. Are you saying that in the first trial, the jury never even got a chance to consider automatism?
That's exactly right. And the Supreme Court said that was a major error and that it could seriously impact the jury's decision.
This brings up a kind of tricky issue, though. If someone is found not guilty because of automatism, do they just walk free? It seems like that could be a dangerous loophole in the system.
That's a great point, and it gets at something we call the civil commitment paradox. It basically means that even if someone is acquitted because they were acting automatically, they could still end up in a mental health facility if they're considered a danger to themselves or others.
So they might not go to jail, but the state can still step in to protect the public if they think the person poses a risk.
That's the idea. It's a complex outcome that reflects just how challenging these cases can be. Now let's zoom out a bit and consider the wider impact of State v. Fields. This case isn't just about legal technicalities. It forces us to confront some really tough ethical questions about trauma dissociation and when someone should be held accountable for their actions.
You're right. How do we balance justice with the reality that trauma can have such a powerful effect on someone's behavior? If someone commits a crime while dissociating because of past trauma, can we really hold them to the same standard as someone who acted with full awareness and intent?
Yeah, it's a dilemma with no easy answers. Fields has become a central point in discussions about something called trauma-informed lawyering and how the legal system can better address these kinds of cases, especially when it comes to veterans who are struggling with PTSD.
It's an incredibly important point. We can't just ignore the potential impact of trauma, especially when it comes to those who have served our country and may be carrying these invisible wounds from their experiences.
Absolutely. To help wrap our heads around automatism and how it works in practice, let's try a hypothetical scenario.
Oh, I love a good legal brain teaser. Hit me with it.
All right. Imagine this. Someone is sleepwalking, and while in that sleepwalking state, they assault someone.
Okay. I think I see where you're going with this.
Would this be considered automatism under the rules set forth in Fields? What do you think?
Well, sleepwalking definitely fits the bill for an involuntary action, so that seems like it checks off the first element of the test. And I'm guessing experts could testify about sleepwalking and how it works, so that covers element two as well.
You're right on track. And since we're talking about regular sleepwalking, there's no voluntary intoxication involved.
So we're three for three. It seems like we've got a pretty strong case for automatism here. The sleepwalker was unconscious. We can back it up with expert testimony, and there's no intoxication to complicate things.
But let's add a twist to our hypothetical. What if the sleepwalker took sleeping pills right before bed?
Aha, you're throwing a wrench into the equation. Now we're back to that whole issue of voluntary intoxication, which we know can negate the automatism defense.
Exactly. Something as seemingly small as taking a sleeping pill could completely change the legal playing field. It underscores just how crucial it is to understand the finer points of the law and how small details can have a huge impact on a case.
It's like a legal chain reaction. One element changes and the whole outcome could shift dramatically.
Right. This brings us to another important aspect of the Fields case, its impact on the legal profession itself. Both defense attorneys and prosecutors had to adjust their strategies in light of this decision.
So how did Fields change the game for lawyers?
Well, for defense attorneys, Fields was a victory for a more holistic approach to lawyering, where they consider the impact of trauma on their clients' actions. It gave them a powerful legal tool to argue that sometimes a client's actions aren't fully under their control.
I bet it also put a much bigger emphasis on the role of expert witnesses, especially in these cases involving these complex psychological issues.
Absolutely. Fields made it clear that you can't effectively argue a case like this without solid scientific evidence and experts who can explain those complexities to a jury.
But I imagine prosecutors weren't exactly thrilled with this decision. They probably worried that it would make it easier for people to get away with crimes by claiming they were dissociating.
That's a valid concern. Critics of the Fields decision argued that it opened the door for all sorts of mental health defenses, potentially making it harder to hold people accountable for their actions. They worried that it would be too easy for defendants to fake dissociative states, or PTSD, to avoid responsibility.
So we're back to that difficult balancing act, again recognizing the very real effects of trauma while also guarding against false claims.
Exactly. And this is where the role of the jury becomes super important. They're the ones who ultimately have to decide whether or not to accept the defense's argument.
But can a jury, even with the help of expert testimony, really tell the difference between genuine dissociation and someone who's just putting on an act? It seems like an incredibly difficult task.
It's a question that legal scholars have been debating for years. Some argue that juries simply aren't equipped to make those kinds of nuanced judgments, especially when you're dealing with such complex psychological concepts. They worry that juries might be swayed by emotion or misunderstand the expert testimony.
It's a valid concern, especially considering what's at stake, people's lives and freedom.
Absolutely. The stakes are incredibly high.
So what's the takeaway for all the future lawyers listening in? What lessons should they learn from State v. Fields?
I think one of the biggest takeaways is the power of framing. Fields shows how vital it is to present expert testimony effectively and to tell a compelling story that the jury will connect with.
So it's not just about the facts. It's about how you package those facts and weave them into a convincing argument.
Exactly. And in cases that involve trauma, mental health, and criminal responsibility, that ability to frame the narrative can mean the difference between a guilty verdict and an acquittal.
It reminds us that law isn't just about rules and regulations. It's about human stories, complex motivations, and finding that balance between seeking justice and showing compassion.
Well said. Now let's take a moment to consider the long-term legacy of State v. Fields and how it continues to shape legal practice today. So we've been talking about how State v. Fields really changed the legal landscape, but how has it shaped the way lawyers approach these kinds of cases, and how has it impacted the whole conversation about mental health in our justice system?
Yeah, it's a big question, right? How do we balance holding people accountable for their actions with recognizing the very real ways that trauma and mental health can impact behavior?
It's a huge challenge, and Fields has really been at the center of that debate. It's definitely had a big influence on the way defense attorneys handle cases where trauma is a factor. It's helped bring about a more trauma-informed approach to lawyering, where attorneys are much more sensitive to the potential role of PTSD dissociation and other mental health conditions in their clients' lives.
So it's not just about focusing on the crime itself. Lawyers need to understand the whole person, their history, their struggles, and how those factors might have contributed to the situation.
Exactly. It's a more holistic approach. And this shift in perspective has also led to more collaboration between legal professionals and mental health experts. Expert testimony is crucial now in many criminal cases, especially those involving automatism or other mental health defenses.
It's almost like a whole new legal specialty is emerging, one that bridges the gap between law and psychology.
You could say that. Fields has also triggered some really important conversations about how the legal system can be more responsive to the needs of people struggling with mental health conditions. I mean, should there be alternative paths to justice for people who commit offenses while in a dissociative state? Are traditional punishments like prison sentences always the right response in these cases? It's complicated.
Those are really tough questions. And Fields is a reminder that our legal system doesn't always have the tools to deal with the nuances of mental illness. We're still trying to figure out how to strike that balance between accountability and compassion, between justice and healing.
And it goes beyond just the courtroom, you know? It touches on how we as a society view mental health trauma and personal responsibility.
So Fields has had this ripple effect, raising awareness about these really important issues and challenging the stigma surrounding mental illness.
Absolutely. It's encouraged people to think more deeply about how trauma can shape individuals and their actions.
And it reminds us that sometimes the lines between victim and perpetrator can be blurry.
Right. It's not always black and white.
Okay. So for all the future lawyers out there, what are the key takeaways from our deep dive into State v. Fields?
Well, first, automatism challenges that fundamental actus reus element of a crime. If an act wasn't voluntary, then it becomes really hard to prove a crime was committed.
And second, judges have to tell juries about the possibility of automatism if the evidence is there. The defense has to have a chance to make their case.
And finally, expert testimony is absolutely essential when presenting a defense based on trauma. So be ready to work with mental health professionals and build a really strong case.
As you all head out into the world and start your legal careers, keep in mind that the law is always changing. Cases like State v. Fields make us rethink what we thought we knew, and they push us to make our justice system more fair and humane. So keep those legal minds sharp. And remember, the law is about so much more than just rules on a page. It's about people, their stories, and the pursuit of justice in a complex world.
Well said.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into State v. Fields. Until next time.